I'm Scott Farber. I'm along, of course, with former New York Giant of the NFL, NFL Players Association president of the Dallas-Fort Worth chapter, Memphis living legend, host of the Extra Point TV show starring Larry Mallory, and host of this podcast along with me and my good friend. He, of course, is Larry Mallory.
That's right. Good to see you, Scott.
Hey, man. You know, we missed the first week of football, so we're going to catch up a little bit here, and there is so much going on. But we also went through 9/11, so I just want to ask you before we start. Do you think 9/11 should be a, I think holiday is a wrong word, so not a national holiday, but maybe a national day of remembrance, give it a name for that day, shut down business, close schools. What do you think?
Well, I agree with you. I think it's, the September 11th is a commemorative day for us because of the tragedies that happen around, that environment. And so I think, any acknowledgement of that is very important. It's important to the American legacy.
Right, right.
To maintain our history, to make sure that our youth, know what has happened to get them to where they are today. So I believe that, I think it's very important for us to capture those things. I do believe, though, that, in many cases, we have so many things happening in America, sometimes we forget or kind of throw away.
Right, right.
Things
right.
that are important to developing a stabilized right. society. And I think September 11 tributes and those kinds of things help us understand how we got to where we are today.
I don't think it has a national day attached to it. We do remember in the newsreels all the time, people talk about it, but I'd like it to get that name and maybe it's another day of the year, businesses shut down, it really becomes an important date.
Yeah.
So maybe you heard it here first. I don't know if anybody's been...
Great idea, I got to say. Great idea.
Yeah, I don't know if anybody's been talking about it, but I think it's so important. It was such a tragic day, and we need to, remember it. I'm going to skip through this other stuff because we have too much football. We missed week one. And I know you're going to laugh, of course, because I'm going to talk about the Bears, but you'll see why, though, because I'm leading into something.
Yeah.
The Bears had a big lead against Green Bay, and all of us Bear fans were going nuts and having a good time. And then the second half, Rodgers, his legend just grew. And there's certain things in that game that I wanted to question you about being a former football player. There was one point when the Bears were trying to run out the clock. And... there's just a couple of minutes left. Green Bay didn't even have a timeout again. And they're around the 50-yard line. And I hope I'm getting these stats right now because it's, it's been a while. And it was fourth down and very short. And they punted. And Green Bay, of course, comes downfield and Rodgers, the legacy grows. But my question is to you is this. Fourth and short. Why don't you go for it if you're around the 50-yard line? I know if you miss it, Aaron Rodgers has a short field, 50 yards. You just have to keep him out of the end zone. But isn't, if he started on the 15, say, or the 20, isn't that one or two more passing plays? And if he's hot, he's going to have two more completions in a drive. Why not go for the risk? Because if they got the first down, the game's over.
Well, now I think in the spirit of exposure, I think everyone needs to know how much you love the Bears first, right?
Well, I'm just thinking in general terms, though. Why do you always have to play not to lose instead of playing to win?
Well, now I don't know if that's the case. If you're playing a guy, look at Aaron in week two. Comes back 29-29.
Don't even get to week two yet.
But what I'm saying that
he's got a great history. I get it. But we're talking 20 more yards.
That's true. But it's hard to question a coach, a head coach, that has been watching his team. You answered the question pretty well. If I miss this fourth down, Aaron Rodgers has a very short field to try to get a field goal or try to get something.
Well, he needed a touchdown.
Or even to try to get a touchdown. It's a lot shorter from the 50 to a touchdown than it is if I put him deep. It's also a reflection of the confidence of that coach in his offense and his defense. He felt possibly that my defense is of such that he will not be able to move this ball to get to a touchdown.
Yeah, we're dwelling, though, on the Bear game. I'm just saying in general terms. I see that so often. And to me, I look at it, and not from a football mind. I'm looking from the, you know, an emotional fan, as you already pointed out. Right. You know, thank you for that. But I'm looking at it from the standpoint that Aaron Rodgers was hot and going through the Bears anyway in the fourth quarter. Mm-hmm. If you get the first down, he doesn't get the ball back. If you give him the ball back even on the 10, how many more plays passes does he have to complete in this remarkable fourth quarter to be in the same spot anyway?
Well, it's also, Scott, you know, a reflection of the confidence that the coach has in his units.
Right.
You got three primary units. You know, you got the offense, the defense, and the special teams.
Right.
And, you know, every coach in front of every player and every fan is going to say, I have confidence in all three units. I'm ready to go. I'm here. Let's go, go, go. But at the end of the day, that head coach and his position coaches, they know which is the stronger unit, which is the unit that you can depend upon, which is the unit that can help you win. I don't think any NFL coach these days really are playing not to lose. I think most of them, especially at this point in the season, it's the beginning, it's the start of the season.
Well, that's going to bring me to an argument then. On the two-minute warning, mm-hmm. I always see these teams march down the field. And they're always saying on the TV, well, they're playing a prevent defense. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like the whole game, it's three and out and a punt, you know, and then all of a sudden on the 2 minutes, it always seems to be, and I could be wrong, but it seems to me like there are these long drives all the time. And I always say, why are they changing their whole mode of thinking? Because they keep saying, oh, they're playing this way so they don't get the long pass behind them.
That's a great question.
But they didn't get the long pass behind them the whole game.
Well, they didn't, and therefore the defensive strategy worked out, what they were trying to do.
So why don't you continue that then
because,
on 2 minutes?
Because even though the strategy worked out, there was an opportunity for that strategy to fail. It didn't fail, okay? But in a prevent defense, you know that I'm not going to get a long pass. And that's what you're trying to prevent. So what you see in a drive in terms of the last 2 minutes of a football game is that you see, number one, a lot of short routes, out routes, routes to stop the clock.
Yeah.
I'm trying to get as much time, you know, as I can to get as far down as I can.
Yeah.
And so you're seeing the defensive coaches are saying the worst thing you can do is let somebody get behind you.
Right.
So you see a lot of depth. You see guys playing off a lot more than they do in the regular season. You don't see as much interruption at the point of attack, at the line of scrimmage, you know, adjusting their routes. They can run their routes cleaner in the last 2 minutes, and usually it's an out pattern or an in pattern or some pattern that can get the clock stopped.
Yeah, well, I just see those, you know, it seems like there's that zone coverage or whatnot. I just see those two-minute drives going down the field all the time.
Yeah.
Now, you know, it's also interesting to me what I noticed, like in yesterday, and I know we're jumping ahead again, mm-hmm. is that it seems like we're becoming a passing league again instead of a running league. I only saw, and I, you know, I didn't look at every game, but I only saw one game, Joe Mixon, on he's on Minnesota now, I believe, mm-hmm. carried 21 times. It was the only back that carried over 20 carries yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I'm going, you know, some of these were way down. And then I'm seeing, even in these losing games, the yardage of 350 yards for the losing quarterback and everything. Is the game changing to just a passing league now?
Well, I think you're right. I think the game is evolving. In fact, you know, I'm sure at some point we'll talk about the Giants and the Cowboys. And, you know, a lot of times we've talked about mobile quarterbacks. I can't categorically say that the game is changing to passing to running, especially when you got running backs now like Ezekiel Elliott, Todd Gurley, Barkley, the guy from the Giants.
Right.
These are stallion running backs.
Yes. Now, I didn't look at last night's game to see what their numbers were in running, uh-huh. so they might have done over 20 carries.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, at the end of the day, I don't see it evolving so much from passing to running. I see the game evolving to more of a motion game, more of a game of movement. Quarterbacks that have to stand in the same place all the time.
Right.
Those defensive linemen are running 4-5, 4-6s now. They know where he is.
Right.
Quarterbacks
right.
now have to move the pocket. That's why the Cowboys looked a lot better than they did the first week. Because at the end of the day, they Cowboys didn't have they were the no team in the league had over 20 yards in rushing, and they were one of them.
Yeah,
they were the
yeah.
main one. So I don't know if it's – I think it's moving toward running backs that are versatile, that are big, that can complement the game, and therefore, when you can get them out on a one-on-one tackle and then toss them the ball versus them having to run through all of these big linemen, they even become more of a threat.
So did Trubisky on week one, jumping back, mm-hmm. miss an opportunity for the Bears because he did get the ball one more time with about a minute and a half or whatever it was left, and he didn't get it done to get him into field goal range. So is that a missed opportunity that sets them back, or is it just a missed opportunity and we go to the next game?
I think from a professional sports standpoint, it's a missed opportunity and we go to the next game, but I think the other piece is that I've learned something now.
Yeah,
Mitch
yeah.
is still, I mean, he's still evolving. He's the Bear quarterback.
We're
not looking for anyone else.
Right.
But I think also that he's put a lot of, you know, expectations on himself.
Right.
And people that love the Bears are putting a lot of expectations on
right,
him.
Right, right. Well, you know, these young quarterbacks are having, you know, some big years so far.
They are.
That are coming out and just playing some football, and the passing has been unbelievable.
They're athletic.
You know.
You know, they're mobile. I go back to the Cowboy game because I really didn't like the game, but even Dak ran a lot yesterday.
Yeah.
You know, it shows that you cannot have just a drop back passer anymore.
Yeah.
You know, you got offensive and defensive linemen running 4.5s, 4.6s. You have to move that ball around. I think the best way to do it is to move the pocket.
And I am so glad you said I didn't like that game yesterday, because that's the first time that I didn't feel you were going to cover up if I asked you, who are you rooting for, Mr. New York Giant? Because I know there's a part of me that thinks you like those Cowboys too. So
that's a good point.
And so I am so glad to hear I didn't like that game. I feel better about you that you still have your allegiance to your team.
I really do. I'm still a Giant by heart. That was my my most impactful team.
Right.
But remember too, now the Giants did open Cowboy Stadium, and we did give them a loss in the first game in the Cowboys Stadium. So
right,
I was hoping
right.
that we duplicated that.
Yeah.
We didn't.
Well, so. I'm glad to hear that. Now, another thing that I think, get what you said is they're professional, they move on to the next week, was Atlanta, went to week 2-1. And the reason I say that is they ended last year in the playoffs in the red zone against Philadelphia and lost. Couldn't get it in.
That's right.
Week one, the game ended with Atlanta not getting into the end zone from the red zone.
That's right.
And I'm going, oh my gosh, the psyche of this team is gone forever.
Yeah.
But then they came back and they won in week two.
Yeah, they had a good
you know.
Good
all right, one just question that I wrote down here and I want to remember to ask you, and then we'll get back to the games and everything.
Mm-hmm.
NFL players, do they have insurance from the NFL when they leave the game? Or are they like the rest of us buying insurance? I was just thinking about that because all the battling going on that they're trying to do away with, existing conditions again or not. You know, what do the NFL players have? What kind of insurance do you have to? Do you have your own, or do you have an NFL insurance plan?
Well, that's a.
Oh no, I forgot. You're an old man.
That's true.
Yeah,
that's
yeah, yeah. So
true.
I know how your insurance is.
Yeah.
But what is it for NFL
I'm
guys?
I'm a double S guy. Right?
Yeah, yeah,
so,
yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
But that's a great question, and the question is somewhat leveraged on pre-1993,
right,
before
right.
the CBA and post-1993. Right. Now, I don't have the full bit of information about the new insurance programs, but there is, when you come out, there's if you're vested,
right,
you know,
right.
and if post-1993 you can be vested in 2 years and three games, which
right,
is three
right.
years. Then there is an insurance program that you participate in. And if you have serious damage, there's some, programs like permanent disability.
Right, right.
And a number of health programs, joint replacement, a number of
right,
different
right.
health programs that you can get. The statement I'm about to make, I think it's true, but I'll need to check it. But even in vestation, I believe that insurance program stops at a certain point. I'm not sure when it stops. But I think it stops at a certain point.
So it's a rush. It's a rush to get the knees and the shoulders fixed then.
Right. It's not only fixed. When you leave the team, see, you're getting a pre-medical and a post-medical. And especially if you go to another team, so you kind of know where your challenges are, and you know they know where your injuries are.
You know, it's interesting. When I was playing baseball, I had two bad knees, and always getting compounded by my knee leaving the socket a lot of times. Oh, wow. You know, when I would twist and turn and everything. And we're going back to when we played ball, so yeah. You know, it's a long time ago, and medicine has changed. But I was told on numerous occasions that I'm going to have knee replacements by the time I'm 30. I never had a knee replacement, and I'm really not in pain anymore.
Did you wear braces during that time?
Oh, sure.
And they still popped out of the joint?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I used to have to hit it in sometimes. So it was awful.
That's ligament damage, isn't it? Ligament, cartilage.
It was everything damage. It was not good. But I kept playing.
I hear you.
You know, back then we used to rap and go.
Yeah.
You know, it was very, very different than now. But my knees. You know, at my age, my knees hurt like my neighbors. You know what I mean? It's got nothing to do with that. I used to play ball. I don't think.
Right.
But I still have them.
Yeah.
You know, and that's
never took a replacement. Never took an operation.
No.
You know. So that's an interesting relationship with pain. Let's talk about your relationship with pain.
I'm sitting here pain-free. Of course, you know, I do have a lot of numbness in my knees.
Okay.
You know, so I can't even...
We don't know what's down there, right? But,
yeah.
This is so numb.
All right, let's not worry about me. At this point, does it even matter, you know? All right, let me get your opinion on some of these games. The Falcons came back and beat the Panthers. And here, Newton, in a losing cause, you know, what does he throw? 335 yards and 3 touchdowns in a losing cause. But the Falcons beat the Packers.
The Falcons beat the...
Beat the Panthers.
Oh, beat the Panthers.
Yeah. Right. And Newton, in a losing cause, had 335 yards and 3 touchdowns. I mean, when did a losing quarterback have those kind of numbers before?
Well, those are some good numbers, you know, and they had a good week the week before. There was a head-to-head collision in that game. Cam Newton, you know, there's a new quarterback stance where when quarterbacks slide feet first, you should not hit them.
Right.
One of the Falcon quarterbacks actually did hit Cam. They threw him out of the game, if I remember correctly. And I don't know. I wasn't watching the game, but I don't know if that had some impact on the game. Supposedly he had to, you know, leave for a down or two.
What do you think of these penalties that they're calling? You know, when they seem to be just tackling the quarterback, you know, they're saying, well, you landed on him and you didn't have to. So they're throwing these flags. Are you okay with how they're trying to protect the quarterbacks?
It's, the question is, am I okay? The answer to that is yes, I have to be okay. It's one of the new rulings that came out of the, one of the latest negotiations.
Right.
I think we saw it in the Packers game.
Right.
You know, they didn't, So it's almost like, to me, a protection of my major investment. Basically, quarterbacks, you know, make the most money on any teams, and they're the most heralded in many cases. And it's a degree of protection. And especially, like I said, you know, when you talk about that passing and running, the game is just, even in running, the game is speeding up so fast. Everybody's... Yeah. Speed kills in football.
Right.
Speed and size is definitely
right.
And that's what we have in the game today. Yeah, we got speed and size, and therefore, if I don't protect my highest asset, he's going to get in front of one of those speed and size guys at some point, and my money will be gone.
Well, see, and I'm okay with it as a fan, you know, because there's something about you only like seeing these hits where guys are not cold anymore.
Yeah.
Now that we know of all the dangers and everything. So you like to see a nice, clean game. But Clay Matthews got Trubisky, and they threw a flag, and I didn't see what the penalty would have been about.
Yeah.
But I'm okay with it if they're going to do it consistently, you know, so the guys know what the story is.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I think it's important that we try to protect, you know, the players.
You know,
I do.
That's interesting because, you know, A lot of the protection strategies are on the offensive side of the ball.
Yeah,
I'm a defensive player. Now that I'm thinking, as you're speaking, I'm saying, okay, we're protecting the quarterback now, right? Well, we've already protected the receivers.
Over the middle,
we could come up on the line and we could challenge them. Now the receivers are protected. It's like, I'm not sure if this is offensive protection or if it is fans enjoy seeing numbers now. You know, in our day, you know, a 7-6 game.
What numbers are we in?
Scores.
That? Oh, scores.
Fans like to see scores. If you notice every effort now in football, all of the active players, if you make a good tackle, you got to
make a good
interception, you really got to move.
Right.
Everybody has a little move now.
Yeah.
And it's all about, you know, to me, a lot of it is hinging toward people liking to see scores.
Yeah.
The defensive
game. you always like to see scores, especially when it's your team scoring.
Yeah, that's true.
But I do feel there is a need for safety for the players. So I'm okay with these calls as long as it's consistent, because I don't want to be watching, you know, game one of the day and you see a quarterback get hit a certain way and there's no call, and then you put on the next game and he gets hit the same way, that quarterback, and then there's a flag thrown. You want it to be the same for all the games.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, they'll work towards that and everything, but I think you do have to protect the players.
Well, and I think just piggyback.
And when you're talking about, I'm sorry I interrupted, it's all for the offensive guys. Well, that's because the defense is going after, you know what I mean? You're protecting the guys that are being chased.
Right. Well, I think that, and I agree the players need to be protected. And that's part of the things that we try to, you know, promote, especially for active players.
Right.
But I also believe that because this game has, and this can be kind of controversial right here, but because the game has sped up so much, I think now we have to have referees. We have to have officials that can keep up with the speed of this game.
Yeah, they got to be younger, is what you're saying.
That's what I'm kind of saying. Yeah. You know, and we.
Why does that open a can of worms, though?
That does.
Age discrimination.
Well, we have a lot of young players
that
are attempting to come out of the league and become referees. And I'm not sure if that program is as inviting as it could be.
Right.
Because imagine, we've historically had, you know, we're responsible officials.
Right.
But now that the game is going so fast and the guys are quicker, these guys have to run faster and be in the right place.
But
that could be interesting.
But let me give you this point too, you know, because I honestly believe this about coaching, and maybe that might be the same thing with players becoming officials. Mm-hmm. I think that the best coaches, and maybe the NBA is the best place to see this, or Major League Baseball even, but the best coaches are guys that played the game but weren't the superstars. I don't think the superstars could coach as well, because I think there's too much frustration that they go, just do it how I used to.
That's a good point.
And you're a superstar. Nobody could do it like you used
to. That's a great point.
You know what I mean? Phil Jackson, a great coach, not a great player. Steve Kerr, a good player, could make a shot. You know, he's a great coach. But then we've seen some great players that just couldn't coach.
Well, going back in the NFL environment, what I'm seeing is just what you're saying, but in a slightly different way. L.A. Rams coach, young guy.
Right.
We're getting a lot of young head coaches.
I think that's great.
Vrabel. We're getting a lot of these younger. We're getting a lot of these new young head coaches, but I'm also seeing that some of the senior citizens that have coached and understand guys are still there, like a Wade Phillips.
Right.
Andy Reid. Okay. They're not the head coaches.
Andy Reid is, but I raised my hand to be called on.
All right.
But you're right. I think there is a place for the older guys, but not necessarily the head coach, because everything gets, the next generation takes over no matter what.
No, you're right.
You know, and we all hate getting older and becoming not as quite as important as we used to be, but everything changes. But I think the older guys, there's a very valuable spot for them, and it might not be, Wade Phillips wasn't the best head coach, but boy, you still want him running your defense.
And it might be on the defensive side for that maturity, for that aggression.
Yeah, and they could help the younger guys who have a new look on and a new approach to the game.
So Marinelli is 90, isn't he? For the Cowboys. I mean.
Oh yeah. Marinelli, yeah.
So I totally, it's an interesting perspective, but I totally agree. The consumers of NFL football like to see scores.
Right.
The young guys are on the offensive side of the ball.
Right.
If you're a millennial now in a locker room, and we've talked about this.
Yeah.
If you're a millennial in the locker room and you're not the leader, like the quarterback should be the leader, they'll go to the owners and tell the owners, give me that money. You know, I'll be the leader. So.
Right.
Well, so that's a great point.
So what do you think about Gruden coming back? And for $100 million.
And for a 10-year contract.
Yeah, I mean, was that a wise move? Or was that a PR move? I mean, he's not going to last all 10 years and collect $100 million, is he?
I think that he's going to try his best to go out through
Well, we know
contract.
He will, yeah. I mean, they let Mac go. The Bears picked him up. Was that because they couldn't pay Mac? I know the coach's salary doesn't count on your cap, but, you know, your funds are not unlimited.
And
you're paying that coach a lot of money.
You don't like that Mac is with the Bears? I mean,
saying the Bears got a steal there.
Exactly. The Bears are happy.
You know, everybody goes, yeah, but they gave up two first-round draft choices. I go, this guy is recognized as the best defensive player in the league right now.
Right.
Those draft choices, we don't know if they're a bust or not.
That's right.
You know, and then to say, it came out even, they both would have to be all-pro guys.
I like Gruden, you know, as a coach outside of the locker room and as a coach in the locker room. And I'm trying to see, okay, he lost to the Broncos this week, 20-19. So he's what, 0-2.
Oh, they came back and lost.
Yeah.
Because they had the lead. Okay.
Uh-huh. I think it's early right now. I kind of like Gruden. I think he's a player's coach.
I like Gruden too.
Yeah.
But you know, the game just keeps moving. All right, well, here's to my point earlier about the passing.
Mm-hmm.
There was not a tie game in football for almost 20 years. And then Cleveland and Pittsburgh tied. Pittsburgh kind of handed that game to them on a platter. Then yesterday, it didn't take another 20 years, the Vikings and the Packers tied. But here in a tie game, Kirk Cousins throws for 425 yards and 4 touchdowns and doesn't get a W.
Yeah. You know, when I started to watch that game, Kirk Cousins was really my main focus. I wanted to see, you know, is he really who they say is? He looked good. I mean, he did a good job.
He looked great.
Yeah. 2 weeks in a row for tie games, that's absolutely amazing. I think, though, that I like Kirk Cousins and the environment that he's in now. I think he seemed more comfortable.
He's in an environment where he doesn't feel like every play, and this was part of the thing that I felt for Cutler when the Bears were pathetic and everybody hated him.
Mm-hmm.
I think Cousins, like Cutler, used to have to force plays because they would say, once I get off the field, we're deeper in the hole.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think now Cousins goes, okay, if we get off the field this time, it'll be okay because I'll be back on there and not much is going to have changed.
Right.
So I think it's the whole, yes, the change was real good for him. He's in a better environment now.
Better environment, a lot of great athletes around him, good defense,
right,
gets him back
right
on the field. But one thing that really stood out for me for Kirk Cousins, when you play Aaron Rodgers, you are a second team. He's going to get all the focus. Kirk Cousins actually maintained his visibility against one of the great quarterbacks he'll ever be.
Right.
Aaron Rodgers. I thought he held up good against Aaron. Because, see, Aaron, you can't take a break against Rodgers. He kept coming back. That's what I thought, really. I think he got the confidence of his teammates.
You know,
being able to challenge him. And I think that that's going to take him a long way.
You know, and the tie, it didn't hurt either one of them.
No, it did. It did.
You know what I mean? A loss would have been a greater problem for one of those two teams because those are the two teams people are picking to be fighting.
Yeah.
But the tie helped the Bears.
Because
it's just a little nick on both of them.
That's right.
You know what I mean? But I don't think, but at the end of the day, the reality is it's going to be those two teams, Minnesota and Green Bay, probably fighting for the division.
Yeah.
And so that tie didn't hurt them then,
no,
you know, in that regard. All right, Tampa Bay, 2-0. I don't think anybody would have believed that that would have been the case. And Fitzpatrick is their quarterback, you know, and he wasn't supposed to be the starting quarterback. I think he's the Harvard grad, isn't he?
I don't know, but I know he's been to a lot of teams and he's done well on every team.
Yeah, he was never the go-to guy ever.
That's right.
And when he was put into the position to be, he always performed well.
That's right.
Yesterday, he beat the Super Bowl champs, but 402 yards,
yeah,
four touchdowns. So he got a win with that good day.
He did. He's also making it a little challenge to see when Winston comes back, you know. He's doing so well. It's not going to be a question, do I keep up the momentum right now or do I let, you know, with Jameis sit for a little while? I think they probably should keep the momentum. Football is about momentum.
Right. And well, now you don't put Winston back in if he's ready. You got to let this guy play until there's a letdown and then you make the switch.
Well, let's hope so. But you also, you know, you're paying one X amount and you're paying another one X amount, so...
2-0.
That's a good point.
2-0, and the performances have been great.
That's true.
You know, well, Detroit is really having their problems and not looking good this year so far. But yet Stafford, in a losing cause yesterday, 347 yards, three touchdowns. My point is these used to be extreme great days for a quarterback. It seems like every quarterback, the winning and losing quarterback, I've thrown over 300 yards and multiple touchdowns.
But you hit the nail on the head earlier by talking about the passing to running adjustment that's been
going on. Yeah, yeah. Well, it's
definitely a passing league. And if you don't have a running back that can slow the rush down, make sure you get a third and short yardage and not a third and seven, and that's what's happening. There people are throwing the ball, they're moving down, the defensive backs are getting a little bit more money.
And now there's a guy in the league that was just ripped apart all his early years, and now he might take your favorite team, the most popular team in Europe. They have a chance to go a long way because Blake Bortles is playing tremendous. 330, let me just read the stat, 377 on the yards, four touchdowns against New England. And they beat him.
Right. Well,
did you see that coming?
Well, everybody now has always had Jacksonville, not always, the last couple of years, Jacksonville has been on a strength spurt.
But it's been on defense.
Right.
And all of a sudden they
defense
got
is what defense is what makes offenses.
Right. And it's doing what? Well,
that's what puts the ball back into.
But what made Blake Bortles?
Putting the ball in his hand. Now, don't get me wrong now. Offenses are good and 48-47 and all these high scores are good. Yeah. But defense is what ends up winning the game or ends up having you make less on the having a less of a score than what you have.
Right, right.
And so that's where I think it is. I think that they started off. See, look at Jacksonville and the Rams. They both spent loads of money on their defenses over the last 2 years, and where are they? At the top of the food chain now.
And they also now have really good quarterbacks.
Well, yeah, they do.
Yeah.
They have really good quarterbacks, and they have a good running game. See, the basics are still there, but it's still a speed game. And so as long as you got, look at the Kansas City Chiefs. We've talked a lot about a lot of people, but, I mean, that's a rookie quarterback that threw six touchdowns.
10 in two weeks.
That's
the record.
Exactly. See, so the game has evolved to that, and defense is becoming much more important. You're going to score, but we got to make you score less than the other team.
So at the end of the year, are we going to be talking about one of these great young quarterbacks? Or are we going to be talking about Tom Brady?
I think we're going to be talking about one of these great young teams because I think that the move...
Led by a young quarterback or by Tom Brady?
It's going to be led by a young quarterback.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tom Brady has done a great job up there where he is.
Right.
He's done a great job, obviously, with all the Super Bowls and everything. But again, the defensive... Okay, you go.
Well, no.
Okay, the defensive lineman know where Tom is. See, Tom and Eli are the same to me, are the same kind of guys. I know where you're going to be. I have a defensive pass rush to know if I get to this point, I'll find you. You got to be moving now, and Tom doesn't move much.
Now, you got a great point there. when you say Tom and Eli are the same, Tom's always had a great team around him.
Okay.
Eli hasn't had as quite as good a team around him, you know, in all of his years. If he had a better team, would he be better?
Well, I challenge. I think that Tom and Eli have had similar teams, honestly.
Oh, okay. Do you?
Because Bill Belichick, who was one of my coaches, he has never maintained the New England roster. He's brought people in and bought them out.
Right.
He's just always bought in the right people.
Well, that's what I'm saying, though. So New England always had a better team, I think, than the Giants. Or am I wrong?
Well, I don't know if you're wrong or right. I just think that the Giants have had a good team. They have a super. They don't have as many Super Bowls.
Right, right.
They've had good teams.
Yeah, and who did they beat in those Super Bowls?
but I do believe that between those two type teams, they've aged.
Yeah, yeah.
You follow me? And they're still sort of operating. To me, in somewhat of an old school environment, not the new school.
See, well, that's why I don't think New England is going to be that big of a factor at the end of the year, because what I'm seeing, it's just amazing what's going on in the field. I mean, it's been a very exciting football.
It has.
You know, it hasn't been somebody won 10-7. Man, they're out there and they're playing.
They are.
Well, let's talk a little bit. Well, before we talk about next week, I got one other question to ask you.
Mm-hmm.
Are they pumped up or are they frustrated as hell after the first 2 weeks, Cleveland? They tie and then they give a game away.
Yeah.
And I shouldn't say give it away. I mean, it is Drew Brees that was on the other team.
That's true. Yeah.
That had that winning drive. Where's their head at? Are they building on this or are they going, oh, crap?
I wonder if they're, I think it's Josh Gordon, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I wonder if they're regretting letting Josh Gordon go. Because that to me was, well, I guess he did. He injures himself. He goes, do you know the story?
Well, tell everybody.
The story is that, Josh Gordon is their main receiver.
Right.
Dominant receiver.
Right.
I don't think he showed up on time for training camp.
Right.
He ended up going on a promotional shoot.
Right.
And pulling his hamstring.
Yeah. Oh God.
Okay, so that's so interesting. So I think that's, you know, part of the basis. Probably Baker Mayfield is gonna, you know, get the starting role. Tyrod Taylor has been the quarterback. They're 0-2, right? Right?
No, they're one tie and one loss.
One tie and one loss, So there's a great possibility that they, you know, start to bring in Baker Mayfield, who was their number one draft choice, and try to get him ready.
The number one pick.
Right, the number one pick. And I've even heard on some of the local newscasters, they're sort of talking about might as well go in and get him ready now, you know.
Well, that's what I was saying, and you were saying they need to be, you know, groomed and brought along and everything. But from what you tell me in practice, the backup quarterback isn't getting the snaps, isn't working with the first team, you know, in a practice. It's maybe.
Well, he isn't if he's not the number one.
Right.
Yeah.
But
Baker probably has.
Okay, so you think Baker is getting snaps with the number one team in practice?
Without a doubt.
Okay.
He was the number one pick in the draft.
Well, it was interesting. I'm watching college football, I'm watching the OU game, and the announcers go, you know, this new guy, Kyle Murray, who is having a great year so far for the Sooners at quarterback, who's going to go play baseball when the season ends. But they were saying, you know, we're going to forget about Baker Mayfield, this guy, you know, blah, blah, blah. And that's great. He's wonderful and everything. But I go, Baker Mayfield doesn't have to hold his head down. He won the Heisman Trophy, and he was the number one pick in the NFL draft. So for somebody to replace him, there's a lot of things to fill yet. It's a long season yet.
That's right.
You know, it's just interesting to me how quickly, you know, everything gets forgotten and everything. So, but the Browns, are they – okay, are they building on this? Are they just down in the dumps after 2 weeks?
I don't think any of the teams are down in the dumps after 2 weeks. You know, I think that if you remember, there was a time when the Cowboys, I think, with Emmitt Smith went 0-2. It's trivia time.
It's trivia time.
That's right. Well, he went 0-2. They end up winning the Super Bowl. Yeah. So. It's a little early.
Let's plug the show. What Larry's referring to, we just taped two, the extra points, starring Larry Mallory, to get the full name of the show in, the other day. And the first one will premiere this Thursday when this podcast premieres on Thursday of this week. I'm saying it like they realize we're taping this a day early.
That's right.
You know, and then the other show that we tape will be in 2 weeks. It'll be show number 3 and number 4.
Yeah.
And what Larry's referring to, so when you're done with the podcast, go watch the Extra Point TV show. He's referring to our trivia time.
That's right. And you know this, that Generations Broadcast Center has been a proponent of capturing the histories of not only aging society, but NFL players. And I really, we appreciate, you know, that effort, because it somewhat reveals, but what we try to show on the show is the good aspects or the good things of former players. But as you've shared with me, and as Generations Broadcast Center is focusing on, there are so many active players that are doing great things in the community, and it never gets done.
Right.
And I know that GBC is inviting, we're not only inviting former players, but we're inviting active players to come on and talk about those good things that they're doing in their community.
And everybody. And it's a lot of them. And as long as we're plugging the website, we've got the war veterans, we got celebrities, we got the professional athletes, and we got everyday people.
Right.
You know, and everybody's got a story.
That's right.
And when I go and speak about the website, I go on forever about the stories. And I'll just tell one.
Okay.
Since you brought it up, my favorite, I was interviewing a World War II veteran born in 1920. And he was telling me that in 1924, when he was 4 years old, he went with his grandfather to his grandfather's veteran reunion.
Mm.
And I thought, oh, I'm going to hear a neat story on World War I now. And he goes, no. My grandfather went to a 60-year reunion of the Civil War.
Oh, wow.
And all I'm thinking is, I'm talking to a guy sitting here across from me alive that knew somebody in his lifetime that was in the Civil War. And all I could think of is how young of as a country we still really are.
Yeah.
Because we were able to go back, you know, just... I know a guy who knew a guy that was in the Civil War. Come on. It's crazy.
Preserving quality history.
Well, you're not kidding. We gotta save those memories.
You know, and speaking of veterans, there was something very unique happened this week in the NFL. The Buffalo Bills had a player that actually retired at halftime. Did you see that?
What was that about?
I'm not sure yet. I have to do a bit more research on it. However, I can say that when the Super Bowl was in San Francisco, I think we've talked about there was a group of young players that had a meeting, and a part of the meeting was this, the commitment, their strong commitment to doing as hard and working as hard as they could for that 3 years in the professional football that it took to be vested. And their whole meeting was basically approaching, you know, talking about making sure you get your vestation. And then making sure you get your education before you get in the league so that you can have a good career afterwards.
Right.
But, you know, acknowledging the 3-year vestation period. I think he was a 3-year player.
And he was just trying to get his numbers.
He's got his vestation in. But I don't know the background, and I'm going to do some more research.
Yeah.
But I thought that was very interesting. That's the first time that I've ever heard of a player retiring, especially in a game.
So I wonder if the coach knew, and if it is what you're thinking, possibly that he had to get a certain number of games in, is what you're saying. I wonder if the coach said, "All right, I'm going to keep you on the squad to give you those 2 games."
I'm not sure if they knew he was going to retire.
Well, we don't know the whole story.
That's true. We don't know the whole story.
And you're going to get the inside scoop.
I'll get the inside scoop.
Because you are Larry from the NFL. You know, and I want that scoop.
We'll cover that on week 3.
All right. We had been talking about the Browns. So let me ask you. They're playing the Jets, who are 1-1. Sam Darnold, 532 yards last week and 3 touchdowns. Are the Browns going to win a game this week?
You know, again, I think it's real early. Now, Sam Darnold was like the love child of New York.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody loved him. I think he turned down some of his awards and said that the team, you know, I'm going to take him when I'm, you know, get my professional awards and my college awards. He is just, he
unbelievable.
He was like the new Joe Namath for New York.
Yeah.
I was hoping that he won this week because it was coming, you know, it was really coming off of so much accolades and notoriety, without a doubt, they love him. They love his leadership. They love his way in which he's approached the team. I just think he needs time to get things going. I think he'll change things around there in New York.
Well, let me see the...
you can see how important quarterbacks are.
Yeah, you know, well, they lost this week to the Dolphins in week two, but he had 334 yards and one touchdown. You know, but he's, you know, won week one, but his stats for the first two games are pretty amazing.
Well, I think the overall stats for passing, you know, passing and running. Now, we've talked right now about at least three or four quarterbacks are in the 300-yard area.
Yeah.
Earlier in my day and in the earlier days, you didn't have that because it was much more of a running
game. Right, right.
But I think that these are numbers that are going to be normal.
Yeah.
Across the league.
And, you know, the one thing, too, that we don't recognize is how often do we see a little slant pass or a screen pass and the guy catches the ball for 5 yards down the field, but he runs for 70 yards.
Right.
So the quarterback just got a 70-yard touchdown pass.
Right, right.
And he threw the ball at a little dink.
Right.
You know.
So passing yards, that's going to be.
It's not quite, you know, an exact science yet.
Yeah.
All right. Falcons and Saints, who are you going with?
Falcons and Saints, I'm going to probably go with the Falcons.
Okay.
Going because of defense.
Yeah.
You know, I like their defense.
You know.
And I think it's time for them. I think it's time they step up and start to dominate a little bit.
You know, I'm looking here. You know, the surprise team is also the Bengals. So what do you think about the Bengals and the Panthers?
I'm not yet that up to date on the Bengals side yet. I need to check them out. I think the Panthers can score.
Right, right.
And I think that, and I don't know if the Bengals defense is up to the standard, yeah. You know, yet that they'd like for it to be.
You know, and this isn't going to be a well-received comment, but I'm looking and it looks like, you know, on the schedule, there's not going to be very many surprises. It looks pretty cut and dry on which team should be winning in my mind, and then we'll be surprised next week.
I missed something. You talked about the Browns, and I failed to mention Myles Garrett, who is a local guy from one of the Arlington high schools. Okay. He's been doing pretty well with the Browns.
Yeah. You know, and but you are going with the Jets though over the Browns. Okay. Well, I'm looking here. You got the Titans and Jaguars. That's going to be a good game. Who's going to win that one?
You know, the Titans have really been playing well.
Yeah.
Yeah, but those Jaguars will hit you in the mouth.
I think the Jaguars are going to be really tough this whole year. The Chargers and the Rams.
Chargers and the Rams, I would go with the Rams.
They're another tough team.
Only because of Goff, young guy move around, Chargers. Their quarterback is on the same team with Tom Brady and Eli Manning. And I know where he's going to be.
And your second favorite team, the Cowboys, I think they're playing Seattle, so they might be starting to feel good because I think Seattle they're going to beat.
You know, they looked good on defense this time, and the defensive backs, I think, are underanalyzed. I think they did a pretty good job on Odell Beckham yesterday. Not a lot of double covering, but they did do a pretty good job. So I'll go with them.
And then is this a do or die game for the Steelers? They're playing the Buccaneers. Steelers are 0-1-1. Buccaneers are 2-0.
If Le'Veon Bell doesn't come back, I think it's still going to be a challenge for him. I think the Steelers' turmoil is obviously in the locker room as well. This week, Aaron Brown started to be a bit more vocal about challenges.
Is the coach in trouble?
I
mean, we got Terry Bradshaw complaining about him.
That's a great question. If he is in trouble, know that there's only been a few Pittsburgh coaches over the last 50 years. So
right.
could be time for, you know, for another one. But they don't flip coaches a lot. That's one of the more stable families, like,
you know,
the Bears and some of them, and the Maras.
Yeah.
And so they tend to be pretty loyal to their coaches until they feel that it's time to go.
Yeah. All right, Larry, one thing before we go. I know you wanted to talk about Adrian Peterson. I mean, what a comeback he's having.
Well, I just, you know, he's been around the league a long time. He's taken a lot of bruises up there. If I were in his shoes, I would probably say, oh, Lord, I hate I left Minnesota. Because they're looking pretty good.
But was that his choice, though, to leave?
I'm not sure how that worked out. I'm not sure. I would think that it wouldn't be money. You know, he's been around for a long time. But maybe it was his choice. Bottom line, though, is that he will be. He's performed well in the league. He does probably a lot of stuff, good stuff in the community. Yeah. And he will probably be a Hall of Fame.
Not probably. I mean, he's going to be in the Hall of Fame.
Without a doubt.
Come on. I saw a video of him. There was some disaster or something a year ago or something. I think it was something like with weather related or whatnot.
Yeah.
And one of the reporters on the street started talking to him, not knowing who it was. And then he recognized him. It was very funny, that little clip. But just talking about Adrian Peterson going, boy, I never wish I left them now, Minnesota. But it made me think of Minnesota's not missing him. And it's what you said. Somebody leaves, Greyhound with another load is coming right in.
That's true. That's very true.
All right, man. That's all we have time for this week.
All right.
See you next week.
See you next week.
See how you did. Take care.
All right, cheers.